The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
9 months, you're a monk. Work as hard as you can, and if it goes well, well then you can enjoy, you can have as much social life as you want when the job is done.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetSetGo.ie.
Football on Off The Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. England's goals total 10k so far for Irish football. Gamble responsibly. GamblingCare.ie.
And you're very welcome along. Euro 2020 reaches one of its most anticipated group stage matches this evening at Wembley Stadium, where England will take on their old enemy, Scotland. Lots at stake on this one, particularly for the Scots, following their opening day defeat to the Czech Republic, thanks to, in part, that Patrick Schick wonder goal. The chief football writer with The Independent, Miguel Delaney, is going to be at Wembley tonight to look ahead to this game. Miguel, I get the sense the longer the week has gone on, following that 1-0 victory over Croatia, that people were initially really, really impressed by the English side and how they managed that game. And I think their game management was pretty spot on. But as the week has worn on, I've gotten the sense that the achievement of beating Croatia has waned somewhat, to the point where they almost need to go out and prove a point again tonight.
Yeah, and it's funny that Gareth Southgate was asked about exactly that, about needing to put in a statement in his press conference yesterday. Because it's almost like the kind of the waves of narrative that go through these big games. First of all, I mean, because Croatia knocked them out of the last World Cup and got to the final, it was seen as a bit of a coup to beat Croatia and quite a difficult match. Then when he got into the match, it soon transpired that while Croatia was still as good in midfield, they had little else. And England had obviously evolved so much, particularly in attack. So maybe the win was much more, not convincing, but maybe more comfortable for England than they expected. But now, like, it's been put into a slightly different context. And especially after, I suppose, we've seen the French, we've seen Belgium, especially in attack, and we've seen Italy, that England's win looks that bit less worth standing up for, worth taking note of. So it feels like they need a performance to match that. I suppose, I mean, I heard someone say earlier, if Scotland were, if all these players were, they were a Slovenian team or from North Macedonia, you would expect England to beat them quite comfortably, someone like Andy Robertson notwithstanding, or Kieran Tierney. But obviously there are different dimensions to this game.
That historical nature, I know Jonathan Liu is writing about it this week, whereby it seems as if the historical side of it seems to weigh more so on the Scots, in that they'll put more into the whole old enemy type of chatter. Whereas for England, like, I was going through the squad ages, there's only feasibly really three players in that England squad that will remember 1996 and Gazza's goal and all that kind of stuff. Now, they've met four times competitively since then in various qualifiers, but everybody is obviously pointing the finger back towards Euro 96 because it's the last major tournament meeting of the sides, etc., etc. But for the both sets of players, from the outside looking in, it seems as if the Scots will take more from beating England than England would from beating Scotland.
Oh yeah, completely. I mean, it's amazing. Just having been around the England camp all week and spoken to people around the team, there's obviously all the obvious platitudes, and it would mean something different to Southgate given he's that bit older. But for players like from their late 20s or below, it just doesn't really mean the same thing. They just don't have the same awareness of it. And it, like, when I was around the camp this week, I was kind of thinking, like, it actually sort of reminded me of the FA Cup, in that it's another classic football tradition. And in this case, actually the oldest football tradition, given it was one of the very first games, Scotland against England. But another classic tradition that's just been eroded by the modern game and everything the modern game entails. And obviously players, they'd love to win it. They like to be involved. They realise it's a privilege and all the rest of it. But they just have bigger concerns now. And that's certainly the case for England. I mean, if England were to slip up, you know, they would just go on to the Czech Republic game and look to win the group because they've got bigger concerns with terms. But even for Scotland, it does definitely mean more for them. They realise what it means to the fans. But this is about much more than the match against England. This is basically about their tournament survival now.
as a strange sidebar, it is odd that the less this game has been played, the seeming less it has meant, because when you talk about like rivalries, and I guess like European football is a good example whereby, you know, a Liverpool playing a Real Madrid used to have a real cachet about it, and now there's a chance you might see it every year or every second year. Similarly with England-Scotland back in the 70s and 80s, we literally saw this every year or 2 years, to the point that, you know, you would have every right to be tired of it then, whereas now there doesn't seem to be the big hubbub around it that there would have been back then.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I think as you mentioned that Jonathan Liu piece, it was a cultural event in 1996, and maybe right up until those playoffs they had for Euro 2000 a few years later. But since then, you just don't feel the same thing. I was up in Hamden, actually, for their last competitive meeting, a 2-2 draw with two late free kicks from, I think it was Griffiths. Mm. And I the Scottish atmosphere made something of the game. But there was still a certain extent, particularly in the English side, that it was just another match. I know it feels harsh to say that, but... Because there is so much wrapped into it, but I think that's precisely the case. And I think Jonathan's piece actually caught it spot on. In fact, I was frustrated I read it after I'd written my piece about history.
It's a to be honest with you, and without wanting to get too much into the weeds in this, it is a subject that is being written about so much that it's kind of hard to find your own elbow room in terms of getting your piece right this week.
Yeah, I mean, but that also ties into, I mean, going into this week, I was actually thinking, oh, it'd be great to do a big Scotland-England piece, touching all the history, the resonance, what it means, actually how rich it is. Because I did something like that for the FA Cup final, and that actually came off. But it's a bit different from the FA Cup final because it still has, it's an annual thing, it's got that prestige. And you can talk about what that meaning used to be. Whereas for this, it doesn't really feel the same. Like, living in London and on the English side, they don't seem to care about that meaning. And I realised I was kind of getting into it. No one actually wants to read about this. Football going back to the 1870s when Scotland was a superpower. And again, like it just kind of emphasizes what a different world it was. And that, and this is something I wrote in my own piece today. I mean, this is just the reality now. Scotland's it's a population of nearly 5.5 million people. And it's impossible for a country like that to be any sort of football power anymore for any length of time, basically because and this is something that's becoming a theme in the tournament, I think, basically because countries like the major Western European football countries, England, France, Germany, Spain, to a lesser extent Belgium and the Netherlands, have basically industrialized talent production. So they've got, and it's, I think it's particularly true of France at the moment, and England, we can see with all these attackers they've got, just this conveyor belt of quality. And for countries that don't have that wealth or that population mass, they can't quite compete in the same way. They can only do it for a certain amount of time. And Croatia, perhaps the ultimate example of that, and that they can go through these waves, we saw with the last World Cup, but it's very difficult to sustain.
Listen, we could probably empathise with that a little bit, somewhat to a degree as well. But in terms of like recognition and whether or not this is just quote unquote another game, like Andy Robertson is somebody I know this week who's pointed that out and who said that they don't necessarily get the recognition they deserve from their English counterparts. But on that, it's more of a case that English players, they don't really, I mean this not in a glib sense, but they don't really care. It's not a thing to them.
No, and why would they? I mean, because even the fact that, like, obviously, because it was a less globalised football world right up until the 90s, you would have Scottish players, and this is true for us as well in Ireland, Scottish players were absolute fixtures of England's greatest sides. Now they draw their talent pool from all over the world. There's just less of them involved. Maybe there's the argument about whether kind of the quality threshold has dropped in countries like Scotland and Ireland as well. Although Scotland have had a little bit of a resurgence. But it just means that the players aren't aware in the same way. So like in dressing rooms of the 80s and even into the 90s for that game in 96, you know, Scottish-English relations would have been a live thing in the dressing room. It would have come up, you know, a bit of banter as they put it, all the rest of it. Whereas now it's just, it's not relevant. Because even like Andy Robertson said it, you know, oh, you'd see it in a lot of Premier League dressing rooms. And I was kind of thinking to myself, well, how many? He's probably actually in a pretty distinctive case because there's not that many Scottish players or Scottish internationals in Premier League teams as there used to be.
From their point of view, they can't afford to lose tonight, which kind of begs the question, is this going to be a pretty ugly game to watch? Because I know the weather in London today hasn't been great. That might play into it a little bit. Scotland, definitely after the 2-0 defeat to the Czechs, can't afford to lose. Is there a sense that they're just going to dig in and get the draw that they probably need out of this game tonight?
Yeah, you can possibly. I've been in. I was just out before I came on, and you can possibly see how the effect of the weather on me because I got lashed on. it's very heavy. It's been very muggy the last few days in London. Like the weather was brilliant up until Wednesday, 30 degrees sun, and then I think that just broke last night and it started to absolutely lash. And it's kind of been torrential ever since. And I mean, maybe that's one thing that will help Scotland. I mean, because the one thing about games like this, when there is a mismatch, ultimately, if everything goes according to plan and as you'd expect, the bigger, better team will win. And that's how England should be seeing it. So what I suppose what any or why you think any sort of distortions favour the so-called smaller team is because it just skews that. It skews that playing field. And so from that perspective, maybe the weather will just going to be something that aids Scotland a little bit. And also, I suppose, it serves them and maybe turning it into a bit more of a derby match or kind of, you know, a bit more of a parochial affair. I mean, that was something that came up in 96. I interviewed Darren Anderton about it last year. He spoke about it. It was something, again, Southgate brought up in his press conference where, you know, it suits England for this to be very much an international match with an international feel. Hmm. It suits Scotland for this to be essentially something much closer to a classic derby affair.
You've seen both of them up close. You've been at Wembley, you've been at Hampden so far in this tournament. Do you fancy the Scots to be able to pull that off tonight?
No. I think they'll give it a game go, as a John Giles might say. Game as, but I'd be very surprised if England don't win this by 2 or 3 goals. I think it should be very comfortable. But who knows? Of course, given that English is not... It's not arrogant for me to say that. But that, who knows? I mean, given that's the general expectation and you have like pundits like Rio Ferdinand talking about how England should win the game easily, maybe that's something that will feed into Scotland as well.
Mm. Southgate's made a big thing. Like, it's funny you mentioned the word arrogance there. Like, he's made a big thing that his players aren't arrogant, that they're actually pretty humble. They're, you know, fairly down-to-earth group of players. It's come across, particularly during the Tyrone Mings press conference during the week. I've seen others as well. Jack Grealish looked very at ease, very comfortable. It seems like a very camp that's at ease with itself, that there doesn't seem to be too much pressure on them. Not in the sense that they don't have the weight of expectation on them, as any England team does, but they don't seem overawed by any of this and that they're taking literally everything in their stride. They're all pretty happy. They're a content bunch.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. And I've spent a fair few days up at their camp. And a lot of the players, I mean, and I have to say this, it's especially true of Declan Rice and Jack Grealish. they're just a really not likeable group of lads. There isn't that arrogance about them, as you say. They take things in their stride. They're quite easy to relate to. So certainly they don't breed that arrogance that people talk about. And it is quite a likeable English team. But then I suppose another reason some people have been put off is maybe the surrounding atmosphere, and at least given kind of some of the whole identity discussions, about taking the knee and all the rest of it.
Mm. They're both going to take the knee tonight. Scotland, I know, have been taking that stand against racism in their recent games, and we saw it against the Czechs on Monday. What kind of response? We saw the mixed response again, I guess, last Sunday with boos initially, and then the applause drowning it out. The narrative from Preeti Patel, I don't think, has been helpful this week in terms of what we're going to see or hear tonight. What's your expectations?
I'll probably be the same, I'd say. Although it does feel like, because it was such a big thing going in, it feels like it ceased as a discussion a little bit. I think there will be some boos again, but they'll probably be drowned out by applause. And I mean, to be fair, I think the players have taken absolutely the right attitude. They just say they're going to do it. They're going to ignore everything else around it and just get on with it. And it might even serve their kind of sense of tunnel vision in that sense.
Yeah, it might even be pretty much helpful that both sides are at it tonight. Don't forget Football and Off the Ball with Paddy Power's Save Our Game, donating €10,000 to Irish football for every goal England score at the Euros. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. And Miguel, before you go, I want to touch on Spurs. It's a month ago tomorrow since Daniel Levy wrote his open letter to Spurs fans saying that the club had lost something of their DNA with the Mourinho reign, that they're going to get the right man for the job. That right man has fluctuated violently over the course of the last 4 weeks, from initially going back to Mauricio Pochettino, then to Paulo Fonseca, and then once tax reasons apparently reared their heads, they turned rather quickly to Gennaro Gattuso and as quickly away. It doesn't look good if you're Harry Kane looking from the England camp thinking, listen lads, this place is a bit of a shambles, I'm probably better off getting away from here.
No, completely. I mean, and also from what I've been told, the Gattuso, I mean, they've tried to kind of quietly and quickly dismiss the Gattuso links now, but what I'm told, it was very, very close last night. or sorry, yesterday. Then they saw the reaction from the fans. It was the no ticket to So hashtag everywhere on Twitter. And I mean, beyond that, beyond the kind of the farce that became, there's also the issue that if you stand back and look at it, all of these manager profiles they've gone for, Pochettino, Conte is actually a bit closer to Pochettino, but Pochettino, Mourinho, Fonseca, Ten Hag to a degree, Gattuso, they're all completely different types of managers. So if you're any sort of modern club, how can you jump around from those different profiles? And I think that speaks to the lack of direction in the process as well. And there are, I mean, there's a lot of talk about kind of ongoing politics at Spurs in that sense, and kind of, you know, Levy's influence in these decision makings, what exactly he wants, because he does want a big name. But I mean, a well-run modern club, a big name at this point should be subservient to, or not subservient to, but it should be less of a concern than just having a manager profile that fits what you want to be and the type of club you want to be. I think that's something that Spurs don't really know at the moment. They want to be a big club, but they don't know what type of football they want to play or what type of big club they want to be.
The manager market isn't that fluid anymore either this summer. I mean, there are a couple of big names still out there, but Antonio Conte doesn't look in any big rush to head back into a job, and already he's obviously distanced himself from that particular gig. And on the politics front, it makes me wonder what role Fabio Paratici already has in this, because he's coming in as sporting director. You would think a sporting director would have a pretty big say over who the next coach is going to be. That was his role essentially at Juventus, and that he oversaw all footballing operations and was a buffer between Agnelli and whoever was in the dugout at the Allianz Stadium. You're looking at this going, well, what is Paratici actually doing at the moment? Is he in the gig? Is he having a say over who they're talking to, and where in God's name are they going to turn to next? Because the pool is pretty shallow, as we've seen with other clubs so far this summer.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, someone put it to me today, the modern manager market in that sense, and the way the game is going, everyone wants a German coach, because that's kind of the pressing in Germany is the way you play the modern game, all of that. But one of the issues is German clubs are so much better run than English clubs. They don't have as much money, but they're just, I mean, they're better run than like the Spurs. And it's meant they've got ahead of the game in terms of this manager search. So like, say, with the case of Leipzig, they've lost Nagelsmann to Bayern Munich, but they immediately had a successor lined up in Marsh. Same with Gladbach in losing Rose to Dortmund. Yeah. And English clubs are just behind that. Because, like, I mean, there are budding coaches, but then, of course, a separate issue is just how wrapped up in big names these clubs get.
Gattuso doesn't strike me as being at that level of a quote-unquote big name, though. I mean, he's recognisable, sure, and he's had a couple of high-profile gigs in Italy, but when I saw his name being linked with Newcastle, I think, earlier on in the summer, I thought, yeah, do you know what? That's probably a good, if not a pretty accurate, you know, fit in terms of stability and all else that comes with it. But in terms of being at a Champions League aspiration club in England, it just didn't seem right at all from the off. And he'd only been available for like 12 hours, which makes you wonder, what list are they going off here in terms of their approaches?
No, that's exactly it. Yeah, and even at Newcastle, he would have seemed an erratic choice. It really spoke to how bad this pursuit has got with Spurs. And I mean, there are some parallels with Everton. I mean, obviously, Rafa Benitez is a much better manager than Gattuso. He's one of the most accomplished managers in the game, has a Champions League. Okay, there is a fair argument that the modern game has passed his approach by a little bit, but there's real credibility there. Well, it should really have been a non-starter for Everton just because of his association with Liverpool and what he said about Everton. And that does matter. That does matter in terms of kind of how, you know, how managers immerse themselves in the club. I mean, and the latest is now is that Everton are pulling back from that because they have been spooked by the reaction of their supporters. But it's amazing they ever thought it possible in the first place. And again, as with the very idea that Spurs considered Gattuso, given everything you've said there, it's just remarkable that these executives could come to this thought process.
It's nuts because both of these clubs you mentioned there, both Spurs and Everton, in terms of playing squads, they do need, Spurs more so, I think, in the immediate sense, need a bit of surgery in terms of their playing staff this summer. Like, it doesn't give them much wiggle room, because the market is going to, I think, contract a little bit after the Euros comes to an end. They don't have much time then between the start of the season and the end of the Euros. It doesn't speak to their planning in terms of player acquisition either, that they can't get the right manager in charge.
No, I suppose that's true. I mean, the two are connected. It is something that Paratici's going to oversee. But then there are questions about kind of how Levy, I mean, essentially at the club, it's been what Levy dictates before, despite all the planning king now. But it's also remarkable, given that 5 or 6 years ago, with Poch there, Spurs were considered one of the best run clubs in Europe and quite forward thinking. And they've squandered that position now. And suddenly they're in a bit of a mess and in that very awkward position where they're a club at a certain level, desperate to get to the level just above them where they have certain perceptions. And it's from that so many problems stem.
We'll look on it with interest, as they say, because I don't think it's going to be a boring story between now and the start of the season. But we'll let you go and dry off before the England-Scotland game at Wembley. Miguel Delaney, Chief Football Writer with The Independent. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating 10k to Irish football for every goal England score at the Euros. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.